This is our Family Investment Club meeting for Saturday, the 14th of April. I am having a hard time keeping track of the dates. Something that helped me was that yesterday somebody said it was Friday the 13th, so now I've got a reference point.
That helps me too. Seriously.
Yeah.
Okay, lead off.
You want me to lead off? Okay. One of the things we wanted to do education-wise was talk about the way companies are structured. There are privately held companies, which the owners are either a single person or a small group of individuals, and there is no stock that's traded publicly. And then there are publicly traded companies, where the shares are held by the general public. Anybody can buy a share of stock in these companies. Okay. Can you think of a privately held company?
Yeah, last time when we were looking at who wanted to do different companies, I suggested Follett. And you said that Follett we couldn't invest in because it was privately held.
Okay, that's a big company.
Follett's one of the big companies that my old school dealt with
for okay.
publications.
Okay.
We purchased books from them. And I suggested...
you suggested buying them.
Permabound. And again, you said that was privately owned. So I can okay. think of two, Permabound and...
Okay. And Burger King is privately held.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You can't buy stock in Burger King. Okay. How about...
Get Stephen Durr's thoughts.
Stephen?
My company.
Your company. Yeah. Is a privately held company. And it's growing bigger. It's maybe not as big as the ones that Karen talked about, but it's getting bigger, and it's privately held. Okay? Our investment club could be considered a privately held company. We are a company. Nobody can...
buy stock in us.
Nobody can buy stock in it. Nobody can become a part of it unless they are specifically invited by us, or born into the family, or married into the family. You know, it's a family thing because we have said it is. Publicly traded companies.
Wouldn't that be
all 47,000 of them?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be the stuff that's on our list?
Right. All the stuff that's on our list. Yeah. All the stuff that's sold and bought on the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ or whatever. Yeah, and it is possible for a company to become the other if they so choose. Now, you want to talk about that.
Okay. I want to talk about a category of private held companies or private equity companies. And venture capitalists are one of these categories. These are companies that help startup companies, other startup companies, get started by providing the initial capitalization. They are sometimes even referred to, however, as venture capitalists because they insist on telling these startup companies how to function. They are and can be very heavy-handed in how they supervise their startups. Another bracket of private equity companies are companies that buy the entire stock of another company, take it out of the public realm, then they supervise this company they took out. They may break it up, they may and sell off the pieces. They may get rid of the corporate jet and other perks that management has used to make the company more profitable, do some reorganization, and then resell the company at a profit. These are sometimes referred to as corporate raiders, because of the fact that they specialize in taking companies out of the public domain into the private domain. Companies that do that are such things as Blackstone Group, KKR, Kraber, Colbert, Kravis, Roberts.
That's the same company.
Yeah. Carlyle Group, Tresenda Group. These are big, big companies.
Never heard of any of them.
All right, now that you've heard his list, if you listen on the news, you may particularly hear about Tresenda, the main person in whom is Kirk Kerkorian. You heard of him? Yeah. Okay. And you may hear about the Blackstone Group. Okay, so what are those, particularly because they're doing something right now?
Okay, another one. KKR. They took over R.J. Reynolds, Nabisco. Broke it up, resold it.
This was, what, 10 years ago? 15?
Yeah, a little more than 10 years ago. There's a major book written on the subject.
I read it.
Yeah.
Then how come Cracker Boxes still have Nabisco on them?
They're still Nabisco.
They're still Nabisco.
They took the company...
And got rid of a whole series of little tiny portions of the company and then resold what was left.
So Nabisco still exists, and R.J. Reynolds is a tobacco company. It used to be all the same company. The tobacco company still exists. There are things that still exist. I don't think they got rid of anything as far as eliminating them.
But they just broke it up.
They broke it up into smaller groups and figured that as smaller groups, there were people, Nabisco wasn't doing well because of the tobacco component of it was holding the stock back from growing because nobody wanted to own part of the tobacco company because they were subject to all these cancer lawsuits. And so by breaking it up into smaller companies, then Nabisco has done well. And I don't remember the whole story, but it was major thing that got done.
See, I remember what was going on with R.J. Reynolds, but I didn't know Nabisco was even involved with them. I mean, to me, there's tobacco here and there's crackers.
Crackers there, yeah, right, which is probably more logical.
I didn't know that they were once in one company.
Okay. In the last year, the 10 largest forever events of taking companies out of the market and reorganizing them and then putting them back in the market have taken place. This is really a big portion of the business news this last year. Now, one of the things they have taken out is HCA Hospitals. This is a chain of hospitals all over the United States. They took that private and are currently still breaking it up. They took Univision, the Spanish language TV network, and took it private. And what they're going to do with it, I don't know yet. There is an entire language built up around this activity. Such words as corporate raiders, white knights, green mail, junk financing, shark repellent, toll hold purchasing, takeover target, in play, split up value, leverage buyouts, and hundreds of other words connected with this that would show up in the news that you're not necessarily going to recognize the value unless you know what's behind it.
I thought shark repellent was something you used against jaws.
Can I interject here one thing?
Please do.
Why would a company want to take it private? One of the things is that...
they want to do something to the company in a restructuring manner which would not necessarily be beneficial to the stockholders, but would be beneficial to the company, that the company doesn't want to have the stockholders making any comment about it.
This is very true, because what happens is anything that's publicly traded is regulated by the SEC, which is the Securities and Exchange Commission, in order to, quote, protect the shareholders. And that means that the company has to put out quarterly reports that are publicly that are available to the public. If it's a private company, they'll have to put out quarterly reports. And sometimes companies will need to do something to make their company look good this quarter so that they don't have to say, gee, we went down this quarter. And they I won't say they manipulate, but they do things that they might not otherwise, that might not necessarily be in the best interest long term, because they got to make it look good short term. And if a company is privately held, they don't have to do that, because they don't have shareholders that are only interested in the quarterly current numbers. They have shareholders that they can explain to, this is the long-range thing, this is what we're trying to do. Is that
kind of like a committee versus a dictator? You want to do, you want to do something, you throw out the committee, you grab the bull by the horns, you do it.
This is
a good analogy.
Yeah.
Now, let's see. I'd like to go off on a total tangent briefly. Many years ago, I borrowed $5,000 from my father for a down payment on a house. After I was not making payments back to my father fast enough, and he felt sorry for me and came back and said, you don't have to pay it back. Well, when I sold the house, I then had $5,000 in cash. And I couldn't bring myself to spend that money, because it really wasn't my money. But I just couldn't bring myself to pay it back to Dad, because he had said I didn't have to. So I bought stock with it. And I bought $1,000 worth of stock for each of my five children. I bought it in miniature precision bearings. And put it in their names, and along came a corporate raider. And he was buying up stock a little bit at a time, and when he got to the 5%, he had to report it in the news that he was buying it. And the company panicked. They did not want to be taken over by this corporate raider. So they went and found a white knight, a friend that had money enough to buy the company. This white knight purchased the entire stock of the company before the corporate raider could.
At $27.5 per share.
Five times what I had paid for it. This event paid for a good portion of the college of all five kids. So it can go different ways.
Stephen was old enough that he just took his cash and used it for college. The other four kids were young enough that we said, okay, let's buy some more companies. So Dad researched some companies and gave them choices, and each of the other four, you didn't get to do it, did you?
No. But I got to evaluate it.
But each of the other four kids bought three, four, five stocks with their money and watched them grow until they were time for them to. And what were you going to say? Doug did the best?
How this whole company got started?
No, that was a long time ago.
Yes. No, is that how this?
No. Okay. No, because, well, maybe the idea for it, but yeah.
Yeah, the age of the person who is inversely proportional to how well the stock did.
Yes, this is true.
Doug,
however, everybody did well.
Everybody did well. And it kind of, all four of the younger kids got some exposure to buying, what it was like to be actually able to choose some stocks. I think you came up with 10 stocks, and they could choose maybe four of them. So it wasn't that they were starting from scratch. But, you know, they were all grade school, high school, and able to have some of their own money to invest.
You know, actually, who was it that did the best because he went by the fancy pictures? Who was that? Was that Doug?
Doug did the best.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good logic, because in those days, if you could afford to do fancy pictures...
having looked at different portfolios, on some companies that weren't doing necessarily so well at a particular time were the ones that did the fancy pictures. Their company wasn't so great. And another company that I dealt with who had no pictures whatsoever was doing 70%+ per year.
Well,
I'm just saying that Doug's logic was generally bad logic.
Whatever, whatever. They all did well.
Okay, one last observation in the party. Some companies actually have solicited being taken over, which is a real reversal historically. And the reason they are doing this is that Sarbanes-Oxley is so obnoxious as far as what a company has to do that management of companies are saying they would rather be managed, owned by private equity than owned by public equity.
Doug would have a lot to say about Sarbanes-Oxley. He is responsible for a lot of the necessary reporting as a result of that. Takes a lot of his time. Thinks it's ridiculous.
Okay.
Well, were you going to go on and talk about Chrysler?
No, you can talk about
it. Oh, okay. Well, a number of years ago, the Chrysler company in the United States, which is a publicly owned company, was not doing really well. And I lost it. What's the name of it?
Daimler-Benz,
which is a German company that owned cars, decided to buy Chrysler. And at that time, Kurt Kerkorian wanted to buy Chrysler. In fact, he offered $23 billion for it. He didn't get it. They went with Daimler-Benz. So Daimler-Benz now owns Chrysler. It's called Daimler-Chrysler, and which is a German company, makes cars in Germany, and of course Chrysler's in the United States. But they have not been able to make the Chrysler division profitable. And so they are thinking of getting rid of it. They are willing to sell it. And there is a little bit of debate going on now about who's going to buy it. The Blackstone Group looks pretty promising. This is one of these private equity firms. There was a rumor about Ford, but I don't think that was very justified. And Kurt Kerkorian is once again trying to buy it. His company is called Trecinda. They're now trying to buy it. However, whereas before he was offering $23 billion, now he's offering $4.5 billion. So its value has really gone down. So this is something, this is why we decided to actually talk about this today, is because you will see this in the news and watch for who is able to buy Chrysler. And if it then is one of these private equity groups, so it will be owned by some individuals as that are not subject to the Securities and Exchange Commission rules, or if it will be purchased by a publicly held company and you could still buy stock in it. It's just something that you'll find in the news periodically, and maybe Daimler Chrysler, maybe Chrysler, maybe private equity, maybe Trecinda, maybe the Black Ghost Group. One of these things might ring a bell and you say, oh yeah, I heard that before. So it's an ongoing thing right now.
Okay. I'll go off on another tangent. Why has Chrysler not been profitable? Okay. The per hour worked in the U.S. automakers is costing $65 per hour worked. For Toyota in the United States, it only costs $45 per hour worked. For that reason, there's at least $500 per compact car more to buy a U.S. automaker than it is to buy a foreign automaker manufacturing in the U.S. Add on to that another $1,000 of what's called legacy costs. The legacy costs are retirees receiving retirement. That means that to buy a comparable Chrysler,
to a comparable Toyota, there's $1,500 more to buy the Chrysler.
Unions have done a good job.
They've done a very good job taking care of their membership.
But in the auto industry, they have pretty much gone overboard to the point that, and I'm not necessarily anti-union, except that when it comes to the automakers, they have really gone overboard in the benefits that they have promised to their retirees, and the benefits, more than that, the benefits they have promised to their people that get laid off. If anybody gets laid off, they get paid for life whether they work or not.
Oh, these are the ones I was thinking, what are the places I was hearing about where people went to work by just showing up in a building and they sat and they knitted all day?
Yeah, right. Or they did volunteer work. That's the Auto Workers Union.
Gee, I'm in the wrong industry.
Anyway, watch to see what happens with that. I think that's the end of that.